With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Man there trying to stop Drogba getting himself into further trouble.
Oh, it's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was! Carlos Alberto!
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maradona, smoked and Argentina the lead, the England players protesting to the referee.
Een halve finale komen. Ik heb opeens zo'n gevoel dat we in de halve finale gaan komen. Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan! Dennis Bergkamp!
Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp!
Hello and welcome to the third episode of the Scoreless Thriller podcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm joined as always by Leon. Leon, how are you doing?
So happy to be here again. I'm doing fine.
And we have a new signing on the podcast. We're making his debut. Colbin, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Colbin. I'm Scottish. When I used to play football, I would play as a left back and sometimes a reluctant goalkeeper.
Mm. Now, in professional football, usually when a player makes a debut, the commentator will like make comments like, you know, he'll want to start on a safe footing, you know, no early mistakes. Is that how you're approaching this podcast, or are you going full in, two-footed from the off?
No, I'm definitely a one-footed player trying to avoid slide tackles. Getting sent off early. Don't want to get sent off early.
It safe. Okay, interesting. Okay, so this week on the podcast, we're going all the way back to 2010. To the 2010 World Cup in South Africa, where we're going to talk about the World Cup quarterfinal game between Uruguay and Ghana. Now, Leon, do you have any memories of watching this game live?
Don't actually remember. Yes. I thought about this a lot prior to this podcast, but I don't think I quite remember it. I remember the whole World Cup very vividly because Germany was actually playing quite well. But other than that, I don't remember.
Yeah. What about you, Colin?
Yeah, I think I can remember being actually in the airport in San Francisco on my way to Scotland. Mm. And it was something to do. We were watching it in a restaurant and my mum got very, very aggravated. I remember that being a specific memory of that World Cup.
Yeah, as well.
Was she rooting for Ghana?
Oh, definitely rooting for Ghana. She loves an underdog. Oh,
yeah.
I mean, who doesn't?
Mm. Yeah, of course.
That's my default option.
Yeah, I think it's like...
I don't have any stakes in it. I always go for the underdog.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of why this game has kind of got this kind of infamous status for it. Like, I don't think if the roles had been reversed in any of the things that we're going to discuss, that it would be as viewed as kind of so contentious that, you know, because the first World Cup in Africa, So everyone was kind of very desperate for an African team to do well.
Yeah, and you had this pan-African partisanship, right? Also, the lots of countries within Africa were rooting for the Ghanaians to...
Yeah, exactly. And it was the last African team still in the tournament. And, you know, everyone was kind of desperate for Ghana to, you know, be the first African team that reached the semifinals and kind of go beyond the quarterfinal step.
Yeah.
But before we go further into the topic, I have a quick World Cup 2010 teaser question for you both. Are you ready for this little mystery question?
Okay.
Yeah.
So the question is, who was the only unbeaten team in the 2010 World Cup?
The only unbeaten
team? Yes, there was one team that went the entire tournament unbeaten. Which one was it?
So they must have had three draws.
In the group phase, only drawing matches or something.
Yeah, what is that? Three draws, 3 points?
Yeah, you're out. But then again, I can't remember.
The country
is this the right, am I on the right track though?
Yeah, you are on the right track. Yeah. It's a country which is more famous for their sporting prowess than a different sport.
Do they have a very well-known outfit that they play in?
Oh yeah, just reverse it.
Sorry, I'm not sure if you've ever been to a pub quiz, but not usually the people being asked, asking the quizmaster.
Yeah, you sometimes need a little helping hand, though.
Yeah.
Famous for their sporting prowess in a different sport.
Yes.
It's so broad, though.
Well, I mean, it needs to be. I can't, like, name the sport. If I name the sport, it will give it immediately away.
It's fine. It's fine.
Well, I couldn't say, honestly.
Couldn't say. If you had to get... I think you were on the right track, though. You were... Go back to the outfit.
Someone plays in a particular outfit. That would be the Kiwis. The Kiwis are known... Their name of their team is after their outfit.
That is correct. New Zealand were the only unbeaten team at the end of the 2010 World Cup.
Oh!
A mini...
Kudos to you,
man. A mini, as we say in Ireland, a boulabus... Full of us to
and
you.
It was a bit of teamwork, though.
Nah, okay, well.
Teaming up on Alex.
Still, I think the quiz ends with 1-0 to Colvin. But yeah, because the New Zealand football team are the All Whites. They wear all white kit.
I didn't remember that. That was lucky.
But they went out in the group.
But who was on your mind then? With the outfits?
Oh, them.
Yeah,
okay. I thought, you know, they could scrap a nothing-nothing or a 1-1.
I'll go through their results. So they started their World Cup campaign with a 1-0 draw against Slovakia.
Wow.
With a last minute equaliser. And then they drew 1-1 with Italy and then went out with a 0-0 draw to Paraguay. So they finished third in a group which included Italy. Italy came bottom with 2 points.
Wow.
So not too shabby.
So New Zealand, the football powerhouse, taking over from Italy.
Shame they went out.
Yeah, shame it is.
Hello, this is Alex here from the Scoreless Thriller podcast. If you've enjoyed the podcast so far, please give us a like on Facebook at the Scoreless Thriller podcast, or else follow us on Twitter. And remember to subscribe on your favourite podcast app to keep up to date with our coming podcasts. Now, enjoy the show.
So, and also, let's talk a little bit about, there was a couple other kind of controversies to do with the 2010 World Cup, including apart from this game.
Yeah.
So I think initially, there's also a lot of stuff which has come to light, which has kind of painted a little bit iffy about South Africa being the host for the tournament.
I mean, the whole selection process was kind of dubious. I think it was already prior to the tournament and prior to the selection process, it was sure that it would be an African country.
Yeah.
Because FIFA had this idea that they dropped again later, that it should just switch around. I think
they introduced it for one bidding process. They'll have it for the one, we've got to have it in one confederation. Nah.
And then they gave up on it. Yeah. But so, I mean, I think at the end it came down to like a fight between South Africa and Morocco.
Yeah, and Egypt.
And so. Egypt, oh true, yeah, and Egypt was in there as well. And so, eventually, I mean, as we know, South Africa got to be the host of the tournament, but it turned out afterwards that some FIFA officials got a fair amount of money to make the right pick, which they actually also afterwards actually confirmed.
So, yeah, there's Mr. Jack Warner from the in the Caribbean is very
$10 million.
There's a lot of FIFA stuff related to him, with like ticket scams and everything as well. And also the actual ball is kind of infamous from this from this World Cup. The Jabulani ball, which when I was doing some research for this tournament, I watched every single goal in the World Cup from 2010, and this 18 minute video, which had like, you know, you've got to soundtrack these videos, so there's always, I knew there'd be Waka Waka. It's gonna start off.
That's my question.
Yes, there was, you know, start off with that one. So okay, that's gonna be good. I wonder what's gonna be the next one. Okay, Knan, waving flag. Remember this one? This is good. And then I think the guy who made the videos realized there's only two songs that I know from this World Cup, and I have an 18 minute video. Which will I put in? And then it was just like Akon. And I don't remember Akon being a major part of this World Cup.
Not at all.
But there's three Akon songs was the soundtrack this video. But anyway, so what I noticed a lot from this World Cup was there was a lot of sort of speculative long range shots, which I felt like the keeper should be saving quite easily. And they, for whatever was happening, they were spooking the goalkeeper, and they ended up like spilling them in front of them. And a lot of sort of like rebound goals, which I don't think you really recognize seeing that often. Iker Casillas described it as rotten. Buffon, you know, was a bit more...
kind of a weird way of describing it.
Yeah, it's a rotten
football. What does it mean?
It's a rotten football. But Buffon was... He just described it as unpredictable.
Yeah.
And then...
A bit more neutral.
Julio Cesar of Brazil suggested that he would be able to buy a better football in a supermarket.
Pretty damning.
Which I think the image of it was that it flew a bit like a beach ball.
Yeah.
Have you ever played with those sort of like just inflatable balls that you play at the beach? They kind of just like float up and they sort of spin in different directions.
But that's the dream of everyone's like amateur player free kick, right?
Yeah.
You want the ball to have no drill whatsoever, so no spin.
Mm.
So to just kick it and then it will. I don't know how to call it in English actually.
Yeah,
like it's flutter, but. What's the term for it? When it just
flatter ball.
and apparently with this ball, it was awfully easy. You just had to kick it anyway.
You want to do the sort of like, well, I mean, that's like the whole thing with like the Ronaldo free kick when he just started, was that he hits the nozzle where you inflate it, and if you hit it there, then it kind of can fly up all over the place, and it's kind of not very predictable in which direction it's going
when
to spin.
It has no spin. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But
this is a whole ball.
But apparently the problem with the Jabulani ball was they managed to create a football which was too round. Which I just love that sentence. I just love this sentence. You know, this headline on this news article about it says Jabulani ball too perfect to fly straight. Scientists.
Then they come with this crazy hypothesis. It's just too round.
This ball is too round.
Well, why did they only ask the scientists after the tournament? Right? They could have found that out a lot earlier.
Yeah, well, I mean, Adidas did defend themselves. They were like, this is a football. They're like,
that's a perfectly round football.
Adidas defended its product, saying there are strict FIFA guidelines on the ball, weight, size, bounce, depending on what the temperature is. Not only does our ball fulfill all these conditions, but in fact they go beyond them.
Ooh.
They went beyond the conditions. That's why these are the conditions on how much it can bounce.
This is perfect weight.
But it bounces
way
better. Yeah, way beyond the perfect weight. Okay.
Okay, man.
So we waffled on a bit about everything here.
Yeah.
But let's get back to the task at hand. So Ghana came into this quarterfinal with a extra time victory over the United States, whereas Uruguay beat South Korea in the last 16, and before then Uruguay had come top of a group with Mexico, South Africa, and France. This is also the infamous World Cup where France, after cheating Ireland out of their place at the World Cup, they went on strike and. They went on strike against their coach Raymond Dominic and refused to get off the bus for training.
Yeah.
So they did not have a very good tournament. They finished bottom.
Yeah, Patrick Evra blamed the Vuvuzelas though. He said they were just way too loud. So
they drove them mad?
Yeah. You're playing the Vuvuzelas, which the Vuvuzelas, is ridiculous.
Yes.
They definitely were on strike.
I think Nicholas and Anelka got sent home at half time in one of France's games.
The drama was here, yeah.
If you think about it, it's quite remarkable how. So France won the 1998 World Cup. 2002, absolute disaster, got knocked out in the group stage, lost to Senegal. 2006, reached the final. Then 2010, this go on strike.
The dialectics of France.
Yeah. And, you know, some kind of metaphor about the French psyche or something. But and Ghana, on the other hand, came second in a group including Germany, Australia and Serbia. They got through because Australia had much worse goal difference than Ghana did.
Yeah.
And then, so this set them up for a quarterfinal in Soccer City, which is probably my favourite football stadium name of all time.
Soccer City.
Yeah. I think it's so on the nose, you know, like, soccer is here. Like, yeah. That you think it should be bad, but it's just like, no, Soccer City. This is where I want to watch my football.
And it's so concise. It's just to the point.
Yeah.
that's what happens.
This is where you find World Cup games. So after the short break, we're going to go through the action of the game, go through what happened in the quarterfinal, which all leads up to the dramatic action in the 120th minute.
Cuidado el centro, Mulera, manotea la pelota, en la línea tres veces, en la línea tres veces. Hay mano, penal.
Sí, hay expulsión. Penal. Y expulsión.
Hay penal en la hora y expulsión.
No, increíble. Expulsado Suárez.
Expulsado Suárez.
Increíble. Ya vos está. Sabés que hay una mano, Carlito, hay una mano en la línea que despeja la pelota.
Le va a pegar. Y llorando, Baguián lo erró. ¡Lo erró Guiar y terminó! ¡Uruguay! ¡Uruguay! ¡Permítanme! ¡Uruguay, carajo! ¡Sí, señor! ¡Uruguay, carajo! ¡Lo erró Guiar! Y era offside de Apiá, Esteban. Era offside, ¿quién? De Apiá. Era offside del 10. Te digo que era offside del 10 cuando vino el tiro libre.
Yo te voy a decir una cosa. Después discutimos lo que quiera.
Welcome back to the podcast after our little break. So the game starts, and I think the first 20 minutes, Uruguay seemed to dominate. I think the first half is kind of, if you break it in down into two halves, the first half is much more Uruguay.
It's just the angry humming of the music.
It is also
20 minutes. Come on.
Yeah, it is actually incredible about the Vuvuzelas is that you kind of like. I forgot about them a little bit. You're like, it's a myth, but I'm sure it's not that bad, right? You know, it's kind of these things like from the past where you're like, I'm sure it was like emphasized, and then the game starts, and then it's just like, it's just constant. This is what it was like.
It's tiring as a supporter, let alone as a player. Tired me out.
Yeah, maybe.
but would you make them like? Would you forbid the people to bring them into the stadium?
I mean, it'd be a hard argument to
like ban them.
Break them. Oh, they're made of plastic. You're just going to bend them.
Have a squad going around breaking vuvuzelas. Well, I mean, yeah, maybe. I'm not a big fan.
You're not a big fan.
I like a classic clap or a song. Something you can get behind.
But you do remember the World Cup also for the vuvuzelas, right?
Yeah.
Immediately, it's something that stands out.
But I feel like maybe you might remember maybe some chants or like some more dancing or more singing or like other stuff to do with the match day experience.
Like the Iceland.
The
hand clap,
which everyone copied, which is now
which is so bad, so great.
Motherland does
it. But still, I think I would make the case for the vuvuzelas. Like just for the sake of it, why not have them?
I would have liked it if they had like coordinated like songs with it, just like they're tooting like along, rather than just like a constant drill.
You want to
that would have been more fun, I think. I think at least like it would have broken the drone.
That would be more fun if it went on throughout the whole match. I think it would be even more annoying.
Yeah,
if it would be choreographed like throughout the match.
It's gonna be grim. The whole point of it is that like
it's just a wall of sound. 90 minutes, and in this case, 90 minutes plus more.
But you did make a good point when we were watching it. Like, what percentage of the people in the stadium are making the noise of the vuvuzelas?
Yeah,
right? Is it half the stadium? It's probably like,
it's
is it like 10% or something?
Yeah.
Which are making the noise for 80,000 people?
They're like.
the decibel is 120 that comes out of a vuvuzela when you stand 1 meter next to it. So it's quite a lot. It's like the sound that you'll have in at a rock concert. So,
or
yeah,
a fighter jet.
It's what they always compare sounds to. It's like fighter jet.
Yeah.
ASMR. Sexy ASMR. You would need 100 ASMR artists to make the same noise as one vuvuzela.
ASMR vuvuzela would be such a kink.
Wow. So the game starts, and I think the first kind of bit of action or a bit of stuff I have in my notes is Kingston makes a save from this corner with his face.
Yeah, off the chest of his teammate as well.
Yeah. But interesting fact about Kingston, which they mentioned in commentary, he was Wigan's fourth choice goalkeeper at the time.
Can only imagine number three, eh?
Yeah.
For all the non-British or Irish guys, like Wigan is...
Wigan Athletic. At the time they were in the Premier League, but like very like at the bottom of the Premier League, like perennial sort of great escape from relegation artists. Kingston saves again, I think, in the 25th minute.
Yeah. Well, we see our lovely pantomime villain Suarez grabbing his head already in the 22nd minute. Mm. Accusing the
Ghana
he gets a wee shove in the back and he's already falling about grabbing his head. He does that pretty repeatedly as we go, he's not happy.
He's very like central to the action. Like even at this stage he's one of the main characters in the play of this match. Yeah. And then
he looks so sentimental throughout the match. Like on the brink, on the verge of crying.
I think, yeah, that is like the personality of Suarez, though. Like he's always on the edge, which, I find kind of like very oddly fascinating about him. But yeah, so the first half is mostly Uruguay. Yeah. Then in the second half of it, Ghana kind of come back into it, right?
Yeah, and the pace of the game accelerates. Like with Ghana joining it, it's definitely a better watch than was before.
But yeah, talk to us about how the first goal then. So the first goal comes from Montari just before half time.
Yeah, exactly. We even get that told back by the commentator who warns us that if they really want to score, they're going to have to do it now.
Yeah.
Mysterious.
These FIFA ones, which I've watched, the commentary has been like varied from like slightly obvious that it's kind of from like not done live.
Yeah.
Like I don't think the commentator was in Soccer City that night. I would not.
No, it doesn't feel like it.
But I felt like the exciting was missing a bit. The excitement was missing a bit from the commentary, wasn't it?
Yes.
Or was it just the vuvuzela?
Like, no, I know it was missing. It was missing because he wasn't there. So
right.
But yeah, he says he says he's like this. You know, if they want to take the lead, this is their last chance.
Yeah.
This
is how it happens.
He's shot from 30 yards and gone in.
Yeah.
Which is how it actually happens, right?
Yeah.
He takes the ball, nothing much happens before, and he just shoots at the goal, and then it miraculously goes in.
The bottom right slot.
Bottom right. It wasn't even hammered. I wrote down like he hammered it in, but then watching the replay, it was not even that strong.
No. Wow. And I'm very curious as to why the goalkeeper did not have enough time to get to the edge.
It was not right
in the corner. It was like,
no, but I think he was on the wrong foot. He was going towards the right for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And then, he had to go to the other side.
But maybe he was just put off by the Jabulani.
But I think there's also a defender that might be... like in between the two of them might have blocked his vision, so he might have just been a little bit late on it.
Okay, so Ghana go into half time 1-0 up, they've got their goal. I love also how did you notice they had a little sort of like team talk little thingy.
It was very cute.
It was very cute and very bonding, you know. We've got the lead now, let's not let this
They were
slip.
Pointing at their heads going, stay concentrated, stay concentrated.
I love the universe, you know, when like the football, everything's kind of going crazy for the football team and there's someone just there like, I'm not going to calm things down, I'm just like, head. So the second half starts then, and then just, you know, 10 minutes into the second half, Ghana have made a big thing, okay, they've got the lead now. We want to kind of work on this. We're going to try and play this out now. And then what happens?
Well, our the hero of Uruguay, Forlan, gets a they get a free kick on the outside of the box, and he curves it right into the maybe not the top right corner, but somewhere on the right hand side. But the goalkeeper Kingston absolutely fluffs his lines and takes a step.
I don't know where he was going.
he was going right, and it, like, you can see it in the replay how it just slow motion. He just kind of moves slightly to the right out of position, and then just freezes and sees it go past him, and he tries to jump a bit for it, but it's past him at that point.
I wonder. Watching it, Alex, you said that it might be the Jabalan yet again.
No, because it definitely was the Jabalani, because in one of the replays after it, where he's kind of going a bit mental about, like, you know, that they conceded, and you can tell he's really frustrated. He does this thing with his hands where he's like, it goes like this.
Yeah, he does a little waving around.
Yeah, like a wave. If you can see me now. He goes from like left to right, and he's like, the ball kind of must have like swerved a little bit, like wobbled all over the place. And I thought in the first replay that we saw, you can see a bit of that, but then the other replays are kind of not hard to tell.
Yeah.
But I do wonder if he like stayed still. Like, you know how in the first half he saved that one with his face? He might have been able to header this one away as well.
He was going for his hands. There was like not enough.
I'm sure he would show like preferred a broken nose to that goal at this point.
Yeah.
You know, would have been worth it.
But so Forlan's persistence paid out.
Yeah, I mean,
they did get it.
Uruguay were onto something. Yeah,
exactly.
So yeah, and then so the game is level, and then I think it's fair to say the second from like the hour mark to the end of the 90 minutes, it's a bit tame. There's not a whole lot.
Yeah.
I don't have that many. Whatever. No. How do you feel, Colvin? Was there many moments for you?
No, there was another good moment for Kingston, our goalkeeper. He gets a back pass in about the 61st minute and lets it go straight between his legs. But luckily, he's just off center of the goal. He's just outside of the goal. So it goes out for a corner kick. But it would have been a real howler if he'd let that go between.
But yeah, no, I think it's... He also, like, he hits it kind of off his... from his right foot onto his standing sort of left leg, and it goes out.
It's a very awkward moment.
It's very odd. I did kind of think also that, like, there was maybe a bit of an appeal for a penalty for Kevin Prince, where he's kind of on the top of the left-hand side. But I think it's one of those where he doesn't really do himself any favours with the way he kind of falls. Yeah. He does that kind of, like, kind of little bit... It's a little bit out of date how kind of, like, you know... My whole body has gone rigid. I'm gonna fall to the ground.
Yeah,
which kind of like that quote unquote dive. I don't think it's a dive, but you know, like there's been a bit of contact. I'm gonna go to the ground.
It was too dramatic.
It's too exactly. It doesn't. It's kind of gone. It works against him. Whereas I feel like there was a bit of contact on his left leg, and maybe could have been something. But apart from that, there's not really that much.
No. All in all, it's not a very aggressive match either. So
no.
It's kind of fine. It trickles out then.
Yeah.
Until the 19th minute.
Mm. But a bit of foreshadowing, though, is we do see a lot of interesting handballs by both teams. We see there's Ghana get some given, some not given, but clearly back and forth. It's weird. We see at least six or seven of them, and maybe more that we never got a replay, so we weren't confident. But I count at least six, and probably about half for each team.
Yeah,
which is pretty odd.
The theme of the match.
Very important motif.
Yes.
In this one.
If it was the name of a play, it would be just handball.
Or
what?
No.
Or not handball.
Hand of God, Mark 2.
Yeah, exactly. So let's go into extra time. And the first half, there's not a whole lot. But then the second half of extra time, Ghana are really... really pushing
it. They're going for it.
You know,
they're active, they're giving it all they have. They're running up and down the pitch, and they've got chances.
Yeah. Stephen Appiah in the central midfield is sort of creating, like, driving a lot of possession to the left and the right, and you're definitely not, they're not settling so much for penalties.
No,
I feel like Uruguay are pretty happy enough to, like, they don't have quite the legs anymore to, like, sort of play a bit on the break.
Yeah.
Maybe wait for a Forlan free kick from somewhere.
And it's inevitably.
Like, this guy.
Just wait for him. I think then 2 minutes before the end, there is a chance from the long throw by John Pansel, and Kevin Prince-Boateng just heads wide.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then
that's true.
You think that could have been the moment. That could have been Ghana's moment. But then right on the 120th minute, they get a free kick on the left-hand side. And maybe let's go through frame by frame happens next.
Okay. It all starts with a free kick, yeah. And then it was a foul by Fucina, I think.
Yeah.
And then Paintel takes it. And he kicks it into the penalty area. And then it bounces back and forth a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And then it actually gets to Adia. The goalie's already kind of awkwardly posed away from goal. So the goal is free. And Adia goes in for the header. But then suddenly you see Suarez pushing his hands up in kind of a volleyball move. And he volleyballs the ball out of the penalty area and away from goal.
Yeah. The thing is, there's actually there's Suarez on the line. And there's another Uruguay player who also has his...
He's lunging for it.
Yeah, he's also lunging for it. He also has his arms above his head. So they're both of them sort of trying to cover the goal line for this header.
Yeah.
In this kind of last, which is about 2 yards out. But one thing that I have always wondered is that, did he need to handball it? Because I feel like it's only just above his head. I don't know whether it's I can't possibly header this, or it's... I can't be certain that if I get ahead of this, I'm not going to be getting firm enough head on this to get this away.
But I think it's kind of awkwardly positioned.
Yeah, I think he's not on his got firm footing to make a good leap.
No, no.
So he's...
And he also, his movements are super quick. So it's a matter of a split second where he has to react, and then he just uses his arms.
Mm.
And first pretends like nothing happens. But pretty quickly afterwards, everyone knows, this is... Well,
yeah, I think, and also I think there's the referee points to the penalty spot for the handball immediately.
Yeah.
There's not a little bit of seconds where he's like, oh shit, it's the 120th minute of a World Cup quarterfinal. Did I see what I just saw?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of
crystal clear.
Spot on. Now, I think there's a bit of things I don't think the Uruguayans were actually, they're not actually appealing it. What they're doing is just sort of delaying, right?
Yeah.
They're building the tension. So, when they're afterwards complaining about it. And Suarez, does he go to complain as well? I'm not sure. He's like...
I can't remember. But I think...
You don't see him much. I can't remember. I think he... I remember the... you see him walking away.
Right?
Yeah.
That was it.
I think I remember seeing the referee kind of walking away, and I remember he was alone for a wee bit. And I imagine that Suarez would have followed him right afterwards.
Because you see on the camera, maybe not that long after the penalty's been given, he's got his short up over his eyes, and he's down a tunnel on the side already.
Having a wee cry already.
Running across. Yeah, exactly. But
still watching out for the penalty though, right? He's waiting.
He's standing right at the entrance of that tunnel.
He knows that his movement still kept his team in.
But also the noise when the penalty is given. It's louder than when they scored. It's louder than when Ghana scored in the first half. And I'm not sure. I think it's Mensah going
up. Yeah, they cheer on the crowd. This is our moment.
Yeah, getting the crowd. Which, in retrospect, you're like, you look silly, but I kind of, you honestly understand it, right? This has been 120 minutes. We've got the moment.
This is us in the semi-finals where we just scored this penalty kick.
Mm. Yeah. And then it goes and he doesn't take that long to kind of think about it. Like, it's the referee whistles, it's there, and then he's already ready on the spot, and Asamoah runs up to take it, and it's kind of immediately, he just smashes it, goes just off the top bar and over.
Yeah.
And then I think also what struck me is the silence afterwards. It's like after he's been treated to 2 hours of an onslaught on your ears of the Vuvuzela sound, and it's just, it's like
dead
silence.
Nothing.
Almost a relief, but not really.
I think you just feel the pain.
Yeah. You also see the Uruguay goalkeeper pointing at his crossbar, thanking it. He's like, you're the best. He's like, oh, you've done me good.
But also, and I mean, the devastation on the Ghanaian players, immediately. Yeah. There's quite a few of them which are face plant down on it reminded me of when I watched the Champions League quarterfinal last year between Ajax and Tottenham. And Tottenham scored, had that comeback where they scored 3 goals in the second half.
Yeah.
And Ajax, Tottenham score in added time. And so there's still maybe a little bit time afterwards. But you see them score, and the entire Ajax team are just dead. They're just gone. You know, they're completely on the ground. And I think there's also like a bit about, you know, with penalty shootouts, people kind of often talk about momentum, right? Which team is happier to get to penalty shootouts?
Yeah.
It's almost, it almost feels a little bit cruel that like having had this, you know, this pure devastation that Ghana almost have to go through the motions of having the penalty shootout.
Yeah.
Also, Asamoah, I remember earlier he had a little injury that took him off the pitch for a little bit. And you could do see him signalling with the bench and that, and he waved them off like, no, I want to keep playing. So he could have been replaced earlier, and he demanded to stay on the pitch. So you know, he had that kind of complete authority to be there. Yeah. So it's probably even more devastating that, you know, you could have imagined that maybe if someone else had taken it, it would have been different. You never know.
Mm. So the penalty shootout begins, and our friend Diego Forlan steps up and scores his penalty. You know, never a question in that.
Who else would it be? And then, I mean, then Gyan steps up again, right?
Which I think is actually like a bit underplayed, which is like the most, I think the biggest moment of the biggest moment
she
of the story.
Yeah.
Oh, but we have to jump back one second because when he misses the first penalty, you can actually like the camera swings back to Suarez for a moment, and you see him celebrating, right? Like putting his fist up. And that's also something I think that has to be considered, right? Because afterwards, a lot of people were kind of going on about Suarez and whatnot. So for the discussion,
I don't get, right? People talk about like, of course he's going to celebrate. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there was definitely a cameraman.
Do you have to do it publicly? I mean, he was kind of on his way out. So.
Yeah. No, we're gonna discuss this. We can go deep into this controversy.
Context.
We can practice. But that's an important bit.
This is what happened.
Mm. But anyway, so Asamoah Gyan steps up to take the first Ghana penalty, and you're thinking, how is he gonna be like in the frame of mind to take this penalty after what's just happened? And he steps up and scores. And I'm just gonna read a quote that he said after this thing. You know, they were asking like, how did you step up at and take this penalty?
But he does not just score; he like hammers it,
blasts it
top right corner. Like,
takes a real risk with that shot as well.
Mighty shot.
Yeah.
So he says, "I decided to shoot the first penalty because if I didn't, that would have been most likely the end of my career. I would have retired right then. Despite the miss, I was the expert penalty taker in the team. So I told myself, things happen, and I didn't want to give up."
Wow.
So
brave lad.
So rational though.
Mm.
I'm the best penalty taker. I should do it again, man. Yeah. Even if I miss it, I'm actually the best.
He's not so rational about his number though.
That's weird.
Yeah. So apparently he wore the number 3 because so 3 is for Asamoah Gyan, being a striker, wears the number 3 is a bit weird. So he was asked about it, why do you wear the number 3? And apparently he says the number 3 is a number of power.
Yeah.
So when people lift up things, they lift them up on the count of 3.
Which is such a good point.
And when people warn someone, you warn them once, you warn them twice, and then on the third time, you react. So the number 3 is just, you know, it's the power.
So he's good at lifting things and good at warning people. His message to the world.
Mm. Yeah. So how does the rest of the penalty shootout go?
So first, Forlan scores, then Gyan scores, and then Uruguay. Do you know which player?
It was the number 6.
Victorino.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So he actually scores again. Mm. So at this point, we are 2-1 Uruguay.
Yeah. And this is when you start hearing the booing as well as the vuvuzelas.
Yeah.
You didn't hear any booing up to this point, but I guess the crowd really decided to get behind Ghana at this point.
Mm. Yeah. So, and then Stephen Appiah scores, so it's level at 2-2. You think, okay, so they've, you know, they said, like, Ghana is still in this. You know, this is surprising. You think before this penalty shootout starts, it's going to be all over. You
but
know?
You can
they're mentally shot, right? But you know they're still in this.
But you can also see in the faces of the audience that it's just, like, such an emotional roller.
Yeah.
I just saw this one Canadian lady who was just had tears and eyes. Even at this point, everything was still like up for grabs, but still it's
and Appiah also does his job revving the crowd. You can see him going up behind, and he also takes a shot in the top right, top left corner. So it's also a risky penalty shot.
Yeah. But then, so Uruguay score the third, and then Ghana's captain Mensah steps up, and it's probably the worst penalty that is in the show.
Yeah. It's a rough one.
Yeah, it's a rough one. He does a short run up and
like two steps.
It's not even a run up. Yeah, it's like a go up.
He's trying to, I don't know exactly, but he tries to play it off to his right, the goalkeeper's left, and it's kind of halfway, like maybe a yard from the middle, like sort of hits the goalkeeper in the midriff, and it's poor. And you think, okay, that's probably it. But then the story takes another end when Pereira steps up for Uruguay and he blares it miles over the bar.
Absolutely skies it.
on top of the ball.
Maybe it was the Jabalani. And then Adaya steps up to take Ghana's fourth penalty and he misses again.
Which was the guy who headed the ball already before the end of the 19 minutes, then
his header was
Suarez volleyballed it out,
handed off the line.
Young. I think he was 20 years old at the time, and he'd been successful with the under 20s. And they I don't think he had a single start in that tournament. Mm. But yeah, must have been devastating.
It's sort of a wild card.
Yeah,
and then
didn't
so
play too well.
Yeah, when that he now plays in the Thai second division. His career maybe could have taken a different turn, you never know. And then so with the final penalty, Uruguay's Abreu steps up Abreu has the sort of incredible hair,
long greasy hair, one might say. So of that era, it's the haircut you used to see, but maybe you've got the sleek Messis with the shorter haircuts these days. Of an era.
So he steps up and he of course he panenkas it right down the middle.
Right
just
down
so
the middle.
Cheeky. So I mean just
right into the heart.
Yeah. And immediately it's just devastation on the Ghanaian players. And then the Uruguay players are going wild. And also in the celebrations, I'm not sure.
Suarez is back.
Someone's back on someone's shoulders.
Back from the dead.
He wears a shower, all freshened up, and he jumps onto the shoulders of his teammates.
And he's fist pumping and doing it all.
He's all over the place.
You know, he's the hero, and I think that's kind of obvious.
Even Grant said afterwards, like, I would say Suarez is a hero now in his own country because the ball was going in and he held it with his hands.
Yeah, and I think also it should be mentioned, you know, John Pansel, he on the other hand said, which I'm not really sure I believe, so I think Jan kind of said, is kind of pretty much saying, you know, in the same situation I would have done the same, right? I would have stopped it with my hands as well if it meant my country made it to the semi-final. Pansel says, in the same situation there is no chance the Ghana players would have used our hand. In any case, we would have made sure we would clear the ball with our head.
Maybe they would have, I don't know.
And I think now is probably the good point to discuss in depth, you know, because this, we should also point out, like, the coverage after this incident is extreme in, you know.
Yeah.
And Suarez kind of now is it's at this point in his career, this is like one of the main first incidents which kind of starts painting him as the ideal pantomime villain for people.
I mean, the headlines on the newspapers, we cheated continent crushing Uruguay, a real streak of evil, and then incredible drama, a tale of the bad guys running off into the sunset, chortling at their ill-gotten gains.
Whoa. That's pretty damning.
Yeah, it is.
But his quote, I think, is very good. It's sometimes in training I play goalkeeper. If there's any more salt, they can pour us the wounds. And then he goes on to say, there was no alternative but for me to do that. And when they missed the penalty, I thought, it is a miracle, and we are alive in the tournament. And then I think he also he calls it right the save of the tournament in another
The save of the tournament. The hand of God now belongs to me. Is also another quote attributed to him.
I guess, but most of the discussions revolved around the thing or cheating.
Yeah.
Is it
right to call it cheating?
And if it's cheating, then is it morally wrong? And I think that was kind of the gist of the discussion. The main aspect. What were you going to say? Is it cheating?
Okay, so, no.
Why no, it's not. I wouldn't say cheating.
Well, because
like using your hands in football is not cheating.
Well, I mean, he gets punished though. Yeah, I mean, by the rules of the game, he gets the red card, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think like this, the whole point I think is that like, if you ask any other kind of professional footballer, if you do this, block this, the ball on the line with your hand for your country to reach the semi-final, they would of course do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think.
So, but if it's a boxing fight. And you hit someone in the nuts, then.
But that's illegal against the rules.
Yeah, it is illegal, but it's also, I mean, using your hand is also illegal and against the rule, right? But is it just because there's a rule that punishes this that it's still not cheating?
But I also.
That's kind of the question. Because I would say it's cheating when you hit someone in the nuts when you box.
But
even if there's a rule that punishes you for it, so it's kind of still within the legal framework.
But I'd say a similar situation that's a little bit less dramatic, but still in the same kind of genre, is when, you know, there's a striker free on goal with one defender chasing them in the last minute, and they just tackle them from behind with no chance of getting the ball, and they get a red card, and people will say, like, you know, they saved the game. That's professional. That's a professional foul.
Yeah.
They risk that, take that risk when they do that, and that's part of the game. Of course, this situation is a lot more dramatic, but.
Yeah,
it's no one really claims that is cheating.
Yeah, although you never see anyone who kind of jumps at someone with his hands and grabs their legs. A rugby tackle.
Yeah, no, last year Guendouzi did a Wilfred Zaha was breaking and he, you know, breaks him.
Okay.
I just barely
see it. Like it's a different thing.
No, but it's more subtle though, right? You see it, but I don't see the difference with it. You're deliberately committing a foul. You know what you're doing is against the rules, but people see that like top teams, you need to, like Manchester City are the biggest sort of culprit for this, of teams that like the other team gets the ball, immediately commit a foul. Don't let them break on you. That, and that's viewed as sort of, you know, just kind of professional play. I don't really see the difference between that and what Suarez does.
I guess we can also...
So there's no difference between a foul...
Being professional.
Where you tackle someone and when you just take up the ball with your hands. Like imagine to do the interception, you don't foul anyone, but you just grab the ball and hold it and then walk off. Because I feel like there is
It's more in your face.
This is not how football is supposed to be played.
Yeah, I guess it'd be like instead of doing that last second red card tackle, but doing it two-footed would change the narrative. But I guess it's also not a dangerous foul, so I guess that would also be
different. But it's also like why I kind of find it curious how people get so angry about diving when somebody sees someone dive on a football match and gets so angry. It's, you know, it's such a visceral reaction. I can't believe he dived, you know. But then like every corner somebody's pulling someone's shirt, and then, you know, that's, for me, that's just as much sort of quote-unquote cheating, isn't it? You know, it's just because it's more like visceral or more and there's also like
pulling someone's shirt is not worse. It's the same as diving.
Yeah, I don't see the difference.
If you throw them off
somebody, it's a corner, and my marker has beaten me, and I know if I don't sort of pull him back slightly, he's going to have a clear header and head it in.
Yeah.
I don't see the difference between that and, you know, this guy's coming storming in. I know that if I sort of twist my body a bit, I feel like diving sort of incorporates so much, right? You know, there's like diving, there's been no contact, and I dive, or I know if I put my body in a certain way, he's going to hit my foot a little bit. And it's not diving, right? There's contact, but it's still sort of the same thing, right? You know, I don't see how that is kind of different or why people have this. I think also with diving, it's also people view it as kind of like unmanly or like you know, it's not kind of like a pure kind of demonstration of the sport. You know, it's like, it's, you know, you're it's dishonorable,
you're
right?
Compromising the nature
the ethics of the sport. But I don't see how that's different to like pulling someone at a corner or like doing some the little things that you do to win a free kick or something like that. It's all part of the game.
I think for me it's also an important part of the Suarez moment is that I guess part of getting a red card is that the player sent off, and usually the team derives some kind of benefit from the rest of the game for that red card. So that's like the extreme kind of punishment. But in this way, because it's literally the last moment of the game, of course Suarez is unable to take a penalty kick in the shootout, but they don't derive that kind of gameplay advantage. They, obviously, they get the penalty, but the kind of usual consequence of the red card is that kind of like 30 minutes of a man down, and you get more chances to score, and that kind of makes it feel like it's more of a justified punishment. But because that never happens, it doesn't feel like there's as much at stake with his red card. Of course, there's the penalty, but you could also have a penalty from a yellow card. So it just doesn't, the punishment doesn't escalate with the perceived nature of the audacity of the crime.
Yeah. But also, the handball isn't like, it's also what Suarez did. It's not, I mean, is it that premeditated, right? He sees like it's in the moment, right? He didn't go out on the pitch at the start to deliver that. I know how I'm going to cheat these Ghanaians out of their place in the World Cup semi-final. He saw it's the last minute, the ball's going over his head, and it's going to end their World Cup, and he just sticks his hand up.
I think in some situation, I would have done the same.
In some ways, I almost commend it, because I just think it's like so like. Whew. I'm not sure in that moment I would have had the presence of mind to do that, that I would have thought that
Irishman.
But would you also commend someone to dive whenever it's possible in order to win? Because I feel if you take
if it took Ireland to a World Cup semi-final, probably.
But then if everyone would just try to do it, don't you think that it would make the sport?
But it's sport. This is not, this is not.
You mean
war
this is
and politics? This is like, this is drama. This is theater. This is competition, right?
Okay, but okay. But if you,
I'm being a little bit contrary. But I'm just like, this is kind of how I feel.
Yeah.
Like diving is fine as long it's fine when
it's not fine, but I don't like have the same like visceral sort of. This is so angry. I can't believe I have to watch this on football that I feel like a lot of people have.
But then, what about the biting that Suarez does?
I mean, that's not to do that. That doesn't give him any kind of competitive advantage, though.
It does. Maybe it distracts the enemy.
No, but he gets.
He gets the red card, right? So you could also say, well, within the rules, he gets suspended for a couple of games.
Yeah. I feel like violent conduct, like goes into a strays
yeah,
into
a
different
right?
field
that, yeah okay, that's okay. that's
I,
calling
I
that's
agree,
causing
agree.
Harm to
I
someone
agree.
Right
it's causing
like,
harm to
yeah
someone.
When you see a horrendous leg break, obviously a bite did not cause the damage of like a horrendous leg break after a two-footed challenge, but it's still like it takes it into a different category for me than a dive.
That also brings it into my point, I feel like people have a more visceral reaction sometimes to like diving than they do to like someone who's done like a horrific challenge which could like end someone's career.
He got stuck in
exactly.
Okay, but I think this points at what I would take away from this. I feel like the handball was justified, right? For the stakes that it was at. But the only thing that cast like a shadow on all of this maybe might be Suarez's dubious record in general, which I don't. I mean,
which shouldn't be in the conversation. Which I don't think should be part of the conversation. Like I don't see.
No, not part of this argument. I completely agree. I just mean like of my sympathies towards Suarez.
Yeah.
Maybe in my goodwill that I give to him. In these kinds of situations.
But I mean like. When I see Suarez play against the team that I support, like he's the most aggravating player in the world. But if I'm like kind of a neutral watching it, I kind of admire his capacity. He lives on the very, very edge of the rules the entire time. Entire time he's on the pitch, he's like looking for little things, little pulls of like defenders to get advantage, little like little nudges and stuff. Apparently, he's constantly talking to defenders, like chatting shit. Exactly. I kind of like. In some ways, admire and sort of
sometimes
like,
also racist, apparently.
Well, yeah,
I think
that's kind of confirmed. But taking that out of the
that's true. That I'm trying to make. Like,
but I'm not saying like I think he's a great person. I just kind of admire him as a competitor. If that makes sense.
Of course. But he pushes boundaries. Yeah. Right? But that's the question then. Like when are these boundaries pushed too far? And of course, as soon as it's something that personally inflicts on someone's personal happiness, health, or I don't know. Right, not to being called racist, slurs and stuff. Then that's of course an obvious boundary. But then,
Okay.
So you just want a team full of Diego Costas and
Diego
Luis
Costas.
That's
just like, yeah. Just to make, somehow make an 11 sort of like, it's like, it's shithousery, right? It's shithousery to be an 11.
Okay. But for you, when your team scores a beautiful goal that is, you know,
aesthetically pleasing.
It is a different feeling than when someone dives and then you get a penalty.
Yeah, but in some ways, and sometimes it's almost like as enjoyable, right? That you see the rise of, like, if Arsenal were to win the North London Derby with a dive in the last minute, like, penalty or like a handball goal, then I think I would get almost as much joy
off of it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just to see like the pain and anger in the other. Yes,
and I think when you,
I don't know whether I agree though.
I think maybe that's because you're maybe being German. You actually have a decent decent national team.
Yeah,
I know the only way that Scotland's ever going to win anything is if they do a bit of that shithousery. And I mean, I don't want to see it. Like, I prefer like the beautiful game of a nice passing kind of Arsenal. But if it's on the national level and it means that like my national team's going to do well and they're not a great group of players and they bend the rules to get there. I mean, yeah. You gotta be honest.
You gotta push the envelope sometimes. All right, I think we've, you know, got into the exhausted this conversation as much as we can. I think I should just also, I think we should sum up by, I found this interview that Asamoah Gyan did in 2014. So this is 4 years after the World Cup game, and I find this the kind of like single one of the most kind of heartbreaking things to read that I ever have. So he's asked about like, has he ever watched the game back, and he says, sometimes when I'm alone I get up and put the DVD on and start watching that game. Probably watched it 20 times until now. I wish the match could happen again because it really hurts me every time when I'm alone. It's something that I can never forget.
Poor lad.
I just be like, don't do this to me.
Yeah. Could you imagine how many times he's watched it if it's, that was 2014, another 6 years?
Poor lads.
But anyway, it's been a pleasure. I think we've...
thanks for having me.
What would you, when you had to score a penalty, I think I asked you before, like, you were in his shoes, where would you shoot?
Straight down the middle.
Yeah.
If I aim at a corner, I shoot straight down the middle. It's just kind of like, it goes down the middle.
I think this Irish football journalist has this thing. He's like, why doesn't a goalkeeper just one time just stay in the middle? Because the amount of times where it's just like, they just like, are just smashed down the middle.
Yeah.
But it's also, they don't want to look embarrassed that like, if they stay in the middle and there's like, the goes to the side.
They have to have statistics on it.
Yeah.
We'll do the research.
Next time. But thank you for joining us. Look forward to seeing you next time. Bye-bye.
Network.